Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is November 4th, 2019. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about BitMEX says quality check failure led to email privacy breach. India's defense minister touts blockchain, AI role in warfare. UK tax authority issues crypto guidance for businesses. FATF releases guidance on global digital IDs as use cases grow. Microsoft unveils platform for minting enterprise-ready crypto tokens. Bittrex target of latest $1 million crypto sim hack lawsuit. Bitcoin outshines gold for first time since June. This startup's upgrade code can be used by any Bitcoin-based blockchain. Kadena goes live, announces new token sale aiming for $20 million. What's next in the securities case against Ripple over XRP? Now let's get started. BitMEX says quality check failure led to email privacy breach. BitMEX says its internal processes failed last week, subsequently exposing thousands of the exchange's clients to privacy risks. In a company blog posting on Monday, the crypto derivatives exchange said its mass emailing operation failed, causing most BitMEX users to have their email addresses publicly exposed via carbon copy (CC) on November 1. Data provider SKU says BitMEX has some 22,000 daily users, though the number of email addresses exposed is likely significantly higher. With major email servers imposing restrictions on bulk emailing, the firm said, "To remedy this, we built an in-house system to handle the necessary rendering, translation, staging, and piecemeal, as not to trigger rate limits, sending of important email." The exchange said it sends emails to all users very rarely, the last one of this size shipping in 2017. To expedite the process, the exchange's email system's API was changed at the last minute, but did not undergo the typical checking process. BitMEX is a global business that sends emails to many different email providers, said Deputy Chief Operating Officer Vivian Koo in the blog posting. Unfortunately, this makes the job of large services such as BitMEX difficult at times. The exchange says it stopped further batches of emails being sent out upon recognition of the issue. In response to the leak, BitMEX says they employed password resets and human review on endangered accounts. All users lacking two-factor authentication, 2FA, and also holding account balances had passwords reset after the exchange noted hostile attempts to access accounts. In an email to CoinDesk last Friday, Koo reiterated that no other personal information was divulged. Beyond email addresses, at no point during this issue has any personal data or account information been disclosed. India's defense minister touts blockchain, AI role in warfare. India's defense minister believes blockchain technology is the next step in contemporary warfare. Speaking at an 80-nation plus envoy roundtable Monday before the country's Def Expo 2020 conference this coming February, Defense Minister Rajnath Singh said blockchain, artificial intelligence and big data are needed for next iteration of combat, according to the Times of India. According to Singh, "The role of AI, big data and blockchain technologies has already revolutionized the existing paradigm of warfighting. The defense industry is undergoing a churning to cope and employ these technologies, in order to safeguard the safety and security of critical infrastructure. As warfare shifts from air, land and sea engagements to cyberspace and space," Singh said, "countries need to develop these technologies. The challenge now," he said, "is not just to prepare for contingencies but also to repel threats from multiple sources, and at the same time possess the ability to respond proactively if needed." India has expressed enthusiasm for blockchain in other areas too. The nation's central bank indicated as far back as 2017 that it was looking into the development of a digital rupee. Later it was said to have developed a dedicated blockchain unit, a rumor it denied at the time. Other nations are looking into blockchain as a tool to aid defense systems, including the U.S. Department of Defense, which said this July it looking to develop a blockchain-based cybersecurity shield. UK tax authority issues crypto guidance for businesses. The UK's tax agency has issued cryptocurrency tax guidance for businesses, following up a year-old promise. After clarifying the situation last year for individual taxpayers, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs (HMRC) issued guidance Friday for businesses and enterprises for crypto asset exchange tokens such as Bitcoin, which it taxonomically separates from utility tokens and security tokens. Guidance on the latter two categories is forthcoming, the regulator said. Under the latest guidance, crypto assets continue to be defined as commodities, not money or currency. Token trading corporations engaged in trading exchange tokens, including selling goods or services for crypto or mining, are liable for tax payments. The type of tax paid: capital gains tax, corporation tax, income tax, national insurance contributions, stamp taxes or VAT are at the discretion of the authority. Most mining activities constitute a taxable event as a form of trade. If mined coins are not traded, they are considered miscellaneous income, which carries its own tax burden. The HMRC says that home mining is not a taxable event, however. Using a home computer while it has spare capacity to mine tokens would not normally amount to a trade. To mine tokens for an expected net profit would probably constitute trading activity. Investments and wages: corporate token holdings are considered taxable events at disposal, incurring both capital gains tax and corporation tax. As with crypto asset guidance for individuals, similar exchange tokens can be pooled for ease of calculation. HMRC says, if a person owns Bitcoin, Ether and Litecoin, they would have three pools and each one would have its own pooled allowable cost associated with it. This pooled allowable cost changes as more tokens of that particular type are acquired and disposed of. Guidance for hard forks and airdrops is also provided, although there's no apparent change from the individual guidance issued in 2018. Additionally, employees can be paid in crypto assets under the new tax laws, regardless of the authority's non-recognition of crypto assets as money. However, employers cannot use crypto assets for pension funds, since HMRC does not view crypto assets as money or currency, but as a commodity. Recognizing the fast-paced and dynamic nature of the crypto market, room for specific interpretation is allowed for in the new framework. HMRC's views may evolve further as the sector develops, the guidance states. FATF releases guidance on global digital IDs as use cases grow. The Financial Action Task Force (FATF) wants financial institutions to prepare for the global expansion of digital identification systems. FATF published its draft guidance on digital identity Thursday, for governments, regulated entities and other stakeholders to enforce anti-money laundering (AML) and counter-financing terrorism (CFT) regulations. The intergovernmental organization aims to address emerging security and transparency issues as the process of financial transactions become more digital, according to the guidance. On its website, FATF listed a number of questions acting as areas of focus, requesting private stakeholders to provide feedback via email by November 29, 2019. The areas include the specific risks digital ID might pose to AML, CFT enforcement, how it might support financial inclusion, how a system might aid in transaction monitoring, and the potential impact on implementing FATF's record-keeping requirements. Notably, the guidance specifically lists distributed ledger technology, DLT, as a tool that can aid in the growth of digital ID networks. A number of blockchain companies have already set their eyes on this particular area, such as Civic. In its guidance, FATF called on authorities to develop clear guidelines or regulations allowing the appropriate, risk-based use of reliable, independent digital ID systems by entities regulated for AML, CFT purposes. Meanwhile, FATF suggests regulated institutions, such as cryptocurrency exchanges referred to as virtual asset service providers, or VASPs, take an informed risk-based approach to relying on digital ID systems for customer due diligence. The 77-page draft guidance details many issues related to digital ID systems, including their reliability and independence, and how they might be used in performing customer due diligence. The draft guidance is also part of FATF's effort to the money laundering and terrorist financing risks due to the rise of stablecoins across international financial systems. The organization stressed the importance of digital identity in payment systems, which could be used to identify stakeholders in stablecoin-related transactions. FATF has been increasingly active in the blockchain space this year. In June, the organization published its guidance for crypto exchanges and other VASPs, urging countries to implement strict KYC protocols around the transfer of digital assets. Microsoft unveils platform for minting enterprise-ready crypto tokens. Microsoft wants building blockchain tokens in the cloud to be as easy as plugging in a printer. So says Marley Gray, principal architect at Microsoft, following the announcement Monday of the Azure Blockchain Tokens platform. Just like printers were once a pain to set up with a mishmash of printer types and their respective device-specific drivers, Gray says enterprise-oriented crypto tokens currently suffer from the same pitfalls. You can go and buy a printer or any type of device now and just plug it in and it works, Gray told CoinDesk. It's the same analogy here for tokens, and that is what we are building in Azure. Announced at the Microsoft Ignite conference in Orlando, Florida, the platform allows businesses to choose from a growing set of token building templates that conform to the Token Taxonomy Initiative, TTI, a standards push and enterprise consortium spearheaded by Gray. So far there have been a number of TTI-compliant tokens built for uses like loyalty rewards, or to incentivize software teams to meet stated goals, as well as traditional financial instruments like letters of credit in trade finance. The TTI has already gone further than other enterprise plays in getting different and competing blockchain factions from IBM to R3 to Ethereum variants under one roof. We are creating a platform in the cloud where any token within the TTI framework can snap into place, Gray said. So you can build applications where you want to use tokens with, for example, Dynamics, SAP, applications in the Microsoft Office suite or some other business automation process. Token taxonomy. The Azure Blockchain Tokens platform is being released alongside a host of example tokens. They range from a Hyperledger Fabric Fab token built by IBM to Santander's Bond token to a reward token from Intel and Consensus and many more. A spokeswoman for the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance, EEA, which is where Gray kicked off the token taxonomy, said that while these examples are not yet in commercial production, all the specs are there to download. A tech team can basically say, "I want one of these," the spokeswoman said. Gray, who is also the chair of the TTI, was keen to point out that Azure Blockchain Tokens is not just a Microsoft thing. "It is definitely not," he said. "This includes IBM, R3, Digital Asset. We are partners with them all." So how does interoperability work among the giants of Web 2.0? It's obviously the case that the IBM blockchain platform, for example, runs on IBM Cloud. However, Gray said there should be portability of these token types across clouds and networks, depending on whatever infrastructure people need. He concluded, "The industry has suffered from an IBM versus Microsoft thing, Hyperledger versus Ethereum, and so on. We are trying to break down those barriers." Bittrex's target of latest $1 million crypto sim hack lawsuit. Crypto exchange Bittrex is being sued over a SIM swap that netted criminals 100 Bitcoin, currently worth nearly $1 million. The case resembles other recent high-profile heists in which a hacker seizes control of a victim's cell phone to then loot online crypto accounts. The swap was from cellular carrier AT&T, money was taken from Bittrex, and the hack took control over the victim's online identity. The hack against Seattle-based angel investor Greg Bennett, however, has not been resolved by criminal investigators, as others have before being made public in legal filings. In this case, Bennett filed suit in Washington State's King County Superior Court, alleging that Bittrex violated its own published security protocols and ignored industry standards, missing the chance to stop the high-stakes burglary. He also alleged that Bittrex failed to act as the April 15, 2019 hack was in process or respond quickly enough once notified by him directly. The financial legal examiner for the Washington state regulator handling consumer complaints, the Department of Financial Institutions, concluded that Bittrex did not take reasonable steps to respond to Bennett's notice and appears to have violated its own terms of service, in a signed letter dated August 30, 2019 provided to CoinDesk by Bennett. Though various legal entities were notified of the hack, they have not yet announced any criminal charges in the case, and as such, the whereabouts of Bennett's Bitcoin are unknown. Bittrex's response: Bittrex declined to comment specifically about the Bennett hack and the court case. But CEO Bill Shihara, speaking to CoinDesk about other recent SIM hacks, said the exchange has robust security in place to prevent account breaches, including two-factor authentication and email verification when an unknown IP address logs into an account. These speed bumps might result in some user complaints, he said, but they actually save a lot of accounts from being hacked. But given a target's email may also be breached, it's best to never trust one's phone as the last security stop once it's taken over. Everything could be accessible, he said. I think this is a problem that requires a lot of solutions and a lot of layers of security. And unfortunately, one of the mantras that we use and often publish articles about is that ultimately you can't trust your phone. You have to be aware that you could lose control of your phone. AT&T's Roel Bennett told CoinDesk that he suspects his hack was an inside job, as he said that his account PIN and even social security number on the account were changed, which would imply that someone at the phone company played a role. However, AT&T is not named in the Bennett suit, while it's the focus of similar cases filed by Seth Shapiro and Michael Turpin. While Bennett's present case only focuses on the security lapses at Bittrex, he said the door remained open. AT&T will not escape my wrath, he said. AT&T spokesman Jim Greer said he could only reiterate his prior responses to the SIM hacks. Customers should avoid relying on their cell phones for security. Fraudulent SIM swaps are a form of theft committed by sophisticated criminals. We are working closely with our industry, law enforcement and consumers to stop and prevent this type of crime, Greer said. Red Flags: Bennett says that Bittrex should have known something odd was afoot. The hacks were coming from a Florida IP address and from an NT operating system, he said, neither of which he had never before used. Both signs, in his mind, that it should be clear that he was not the one accessing the account. Bennett alleges in the lawsuit that the hackers ultimately drained 100 Bitcoin from his account, the maximum daily withdrawal allowed. In fact, he had a series of coins that the hackers dumped at below market prices, converted into a further 30 Bitcoin and made off with. They even returned the following day for his 35 remaining Bitcoin, but by that time, Bennett said he had succeeded in getting Bittrex to shut down the account and the unauthorized withdrawals. Bennett's suit alleges Bittrex failed to follow industry security standards in his case. Beyond the different IP address and operating system, his lawyers asserted that Bittrex should have also imposed a 24-hour withdrawal hold after password changes, which he said other exchanges do. What I fault Bittrex for is their inability to see obvious suspicious activity, Bennett said. Bitcoin outshines gold for first time since June. Bitcoin logged double-digit gains in October, outperforming gold for the first time since June. The world's biggest cryptocurrency by market value ended last month with a gain of 10.26%, snapping a three-month losing streak, according to Bitstamp data. Meanwhile, gold gained just 2.74% in October, having dropped 3.17% in September, the biggest monthly drop since June 2018. Bitcoin scored gains for five straight months from February to June, its longest winning streak since August 2017. Gold, however, registered losses in February, March and April. The yellow metal did inch higher by 1.7 and 7.9% in May and June, respectively, although gains were meager compared to Bitcoin's 62% and 25.89% rise in the same months. While BTC outshone gold by big margins in the 5 months to June, the tide turned in favor of the yellow metal in the third quarter. Bitcoin fell by 6, 4 and 13.5% in July, August and September, respectively. Experts associated the sell-off with fears of Facebook's Libra fast-tracking regulation for cryptocurrencies in general, overbought technical conditions and other factors. Gold gained 0.23% and 7.65% in July and August, respectively, as markets priced in heightened prospects of aggressive monetary easing by the U.S. Federal Reserve and other major central banks amid escalating China-U.S. trade tensions. The metal dropped by 3.17% in September, but the decline was restrained as compared to BTC's double-digit sell-off. Looking forward, gold may underperform Bitcoin in November, as the optimism on the U.S.-China trade front may reduce haven demand for the metal. Further, on October 31, the Fed signaled that it would pause rate cuts to assess incoming data before considering lowering borrowing costs again, in part because of a potential easing of trade tensions, according to the New York Times. Gold, a zero-yielding asset, usually cheers dovish Fed policy and faces selling pressure when the central bank signals a pause or rate hikes. Meanwhile, the seasonality is positive for Bitcoin. The cryptocurrency has gained in November in 6 out of the last 8 years. More importantly, BTC tends to pick up a strong bid 6 months ahead of the mining reward halving, according to historical data. The next halving event is due in May 2020. What's more, the ongoing rally in the U.S. stocks may bode well for Bitcoin. Prior Bitcoin bull runs were characterized by a gradual decline in equity market volatility. For example, we've noted its, albeit imperfect, inverse relationship with the VIX index over longer time horizons, i.e. 2017 run-up, analysts at Delphi Digital wrote in their monthly report. The S&P 500 clocked a record high of $3,066 on Friday, and the bull market is expected to continue on the back of three big buyers: corporations, foreign investors, and U.S. households, according to Goldman Sachs. Bitcoin's technical charts are also biased bullish, as seen below. BTC is currently changing hands at $9,170 on Bitstamp. Prices jumped 28% in the 3 days to October 27 above left, with trading volumes hitting the highest level since February 2018. Additionally, the recent pullback from $10,350 to $9,000 was accompanied by a drop in volumes. A low-volume pullback is often short-lived. The 200-day MA has restricting downside since October 30 above left. All in all, the path of least resistance appears to be on the higher side, and prices look set to revisit resistances at $9,600 and $10,000. The bullish case would weaken if the 200-day MA at $9,106 is breached to the downside. That would validate the bearish view put forward by the descending 5-month MA at $9,268 above right, and will likely yield a big drop to $8,500. Note that BTC repeatedly failed to keep gains above the 5-month MA over the weekend. The bulls, therefore, need progress soon. This startup's upgrade code can be used by any Bitcoin-based blockchain. A small blockchain company out of Arizona has built open-source software that it says any Bitcoin-based blockchain could use to improve its functionality. Nexus announced Monday what it called its seventh activation, a protocol upgrade that brings smart contract functionality to the Nexus blockchain, which launched as a fork of the original Bitcoin protocol in 2014. Deployed today, the activation goes into full effect November 11. If all goes well, other blockchains can feel free to follow suit by borrowing the code. Part of the intention was to use the original Bitcoin code from the 2014 era to upgrade that into our framework, Nexus founder Colin Cantrell told CoinDesk. Any blockchain that uses the legacy UTXO can actually upgrade smart contracts over their live blockchain without having to do a chain reset or anything like that. UTXO stands for unspent transaction output, but it's also become a shorthand for blockchains based on Bitcoin. The basic idea is that such a blockchain verifies there is money to be spent before it spends it, which is part of preventing the double spend problem. All the Bitcoin forks could essentially upgrade and potentially utilize it, Cantrell said of his company's latest release. Even if they didn't want to add smart contract functionality, Cantrell argued that the Nexus codebase offers other improvements for UTXO chains, like much faster syncing for nodes and lower disk space usage, for example. What is Nexus? Nexus launched in 2014 and it has self-funded so far by directing a portion of the newly minted coins to the team building the network. With a market cap at $19.4 million as of this writing and a token price that has steadily sat at about 30 cents since last November, the project has had to generate enough value for its emitted tokens to support the team's work. The price briefly rose as high as $13 in early 2018. Nexus had no pre-mine, no venture capital and no initial coin offering. Cantrell said it started as a basic Bitcoin fork, but Nexus has had several activations since it went live. Now it uses two different proof-of-work chains and a proof-of-stake system. And with the new Tritium upgrade, it also has smart contract functionality with competitive transaction times. One of the biggest things we've seen is that scalability is not a feature. It's kind of a requirement, Cantrell said. The startup claims it can manage anywhere from 2,000 to 25,000 transactions per second. One of the highest throughput blockchains, XRP, consistently hits 1,500 transactions per second. Nexus uses a variety of strategies to achieve higher throughput, including sharding and proof of stake, but it also uses something familiar in basic computing but less discussed in the blockchain industry. Our smart contracts run on a register-based virtual machine, and that's one way we've achieved extra efficiency, Cantrell said. That is, register-based as opposed to stack-based. Most existing blockchains are stack-based, which is an older style of computing. The architecture is a lot more difficult to implement, but the efficiency is much higher if you implement it correctly, Cantrell said. Developers will find it much easier to work with since much of its functionality is accessible through an API, he said. And regular people can manage access through a more traditional login that gives them control over a public-private key pair held for them online. We believe blockchain is still a bit complicated for people to use, Cantrell said. However, rather than simply storing them in the cloud, the company encrypts the keys in what he calls mathematical hyperspace. There's no central authority users are logging into, he said. Who will use it? Nexus has primarily focused on technology and hasn't done a lot of business development yet. However, at a tech event in Arizona, Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak announced a partnership with Nexus on a new education initiative that will be built on the Nexus blockchain. Cantrell said Nexus is ready to make a stronger case to potential business partners now because it understands what business customers need. A blockchain is not a good platform for full-on computing, he said, but it is a good way to verify things such as identity, authenticity, ownership and logical soundness. These are the sorts of use cases that Nexus has been built around. The internet can have a secure and immutable data layer, Cantrell said. Kadena Goes Live announces new token sale aiming for $20 million. The Kadena blockchain went live on Mainnet Monday. Formerly called Chainweb, Kadena's blockchain is a proof-of-work (PoW) network similar to Bitcoin. But where Bitcoin struggles with processing large transaction volumes, the Kadena network attempts to solve the problem of limited scalability by weaving multiple PoW blockchains together to run concurrently. In doing so, the Kadena network is able to handle large transaction volumes and other types of heavy data processing loads. Founded by Stuart Popejoy, the former blockchain lead at investment banking giant JP Morgan, and Will Martino, the lead engineer for JP Morgan's blockchain prototype, Juno, the project was first unveiled in 2016. This is the first time anyone has ever scaled proof of work, Martino said in an interview with CoinDesk, adding, We are believers in proof of work. We believe it is a proven protocol and the key feature we needed to fix was transaction throughput. Currently, there are a total of 10 PoW networks in Kadena. This number could increase via system-wide upgrades in the future. In 2018, the Kadena team raised a total of $15 million to launch their public blockchain from notable investors such as Multicoin Capital, Coinfund and Devonshire, the private investment arm of the owners of Fidelity Investments. Kadena is the only team in the world that presents an incredible solution for scaling proof-of-work systems. That's the exciting thing about it, said Multicoin Capital managing partner Kyle Samani. At present, token transfers and smart contract development are not enabled on Kadena. Martino noted the full network will support transactions and decentralized application (DApp) deployment on December 5. The only thing you can do with mainnet release for the first month is mine, said Martino. Outside of mining, Kadena is also hosting its third token sale starting tomorrow November 5 until November 22. Hoping to raise an additional $20 million, Martino explained that the token sale will be accessible for prospective investors accredited and non-accredited strictly through token launch platform CoinList. New raise. In reality, there are two token sales running side by side on CoinList for Kadena coins. There is one for non-accredited, non-US investors in which interested parties who don't wish to mine for Kadena coins can buy their token assets for $1 per coin. For the first 40 days of the sale, investors will be restricted to trading and exchanging their purchased Kadena coins exclusively on CoinList. Thereafter, the coins will be freely tradable. The other token sale is being executed as a simple agreement for future tokens, SAFT. That sale is open to accredited investors only, either within the U.S. or abroad. However, in accordance with the guidelines of a SAFT sale, these coins will be locked for a period of 1 year. In return, accredited investors are able to purchase Kadena coins at a discounted price of 50 cents. This dual structure for Kadena's token offering is a configuration meant to ensure regulatory compliance of the sale in the U.S. and abroad. It's going to serve Kadena and the community long-term because we're going to have done this sale within the bounds of existing regulations, case law and securities law, said Martino. It should be noted, however, that other SAFT raises have resulted in scrutiny and emergency action from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission in the past, with messaging app Telegram being asked on October 11 to halt distribution of tokens sold during its SAFT sale. Chainweaver Wallet. Along with mainnet launch, Kadena is also announcing Monday the launch of its Kadena token wallet, called the Chainweaver Wallet. As opposed to simply holding and signing off on transactions, the Chainweaver Wallet will most notably host a mini-server able to interact directly with dApps. This means that on a desktop computer users can run dApps natively from the Chainweaver Wallet. We needed to have a simplified journey from I have some coins to I can use some dApps, Martino said. Additionally, Kadena is expected to host community gas stations where transaction fees generated by new users can be paid directly by the dApp developers themselves. According to Martino, users don't have to create their own cryptocurrency wallets to use applications on Kadena. Developers can do it for them and preload small amounts of Kadena tokens on these wallets. Later, as users familiarize themselves with the application, they have the option to continue funding their wallets by buying Kadena tokens themselves either on an exchange or elsewhere. As announced in May, Kadena is also partnering with asset manager USCF Investments to create new decentralized finance products on Kadena. About the usability of the platform for dApp developers, Multicoin Samani said the incumbent smart contract blockchain, Ethereum, has faced many challenges over the years as a result of poor design decisions. It's so much easier for application developers to build on top of this thing. Kadena is designed to be developer-centric. This means that developers can build much higher quality, more usable applications. What's next in the securities case against Ripple over XRP? The takeaway. Monday is the deadline for an XRP holder to file a response to Ripple's motion to dismiss his suit against the company. That motion largely sidestepped the plaintiff's argument that Ripple sold XRP as an unregistered security, instead contesting the case on procedural and evidentiary grounds. The suit is unlikely to settle the security question. While Ripple presented a strong defense, the case is likely nowhere near complete, and the company will remain at risk of further lawsuits, legal experts say. Monday will bring the next chapter of a long-running and closely watched lawsuit against Ripple. The plaintiff, Bradley Sostack, has until the end of the day to file a response to the startup's September 20 motion to dismiss. Assuming it isn't dismissed in its entirety, the case, which seeks class action status, may move into discovery next year. At the heart of the dispute is an almost existential question, whether XRP, the cryptocurrency that Ripple periodically sells to fund its operations, is a security that should have been registered under U.S. law. If it is, as the plaintiff's complaint argues, Ripple could be at risk of possible enforcement actions by regulators. But the suit is not likely to settle the matter, legal experts said. No one's finding out whether XRP is a security anytime soon, if ever, at least through this proceeding, said Rebecca Rettig, a partner at Fisher Broyles. For starters, Ripple's last motion largely sidestepped the issue. It simply argued that Sostek waited too long to file the complaint and that he did not adequately demonstrate that he bought XRP during the initial sale or from Ripple. And the company may never need to tackle the question, at least, not to win this case. The defense team crafted a solid motion, said Stephen Pally, a partner at Anderson Kill. The defense lawyers have done a good job so far, he said. They've shown some good tactical skills, they could win, but even if they do, there are a lot of other things that could happen. Ripple's general counsel did not respond to a request for comment for this article. Denial without details. While Ripple's motion to dismiss touched on the question of XRP being a security, it did so as a footnote rather than an argument. Paul Godfrey, a Florida-based attorney, said that Ripple made both a statement and a legal conclusion in its introduction, noting that the introduction to the filing stated flatly, "The crux of plaintiff's claims is the false assertion that XRP is not a currency, but rather a security." The question of whether XRP is a security is a legal conclusion, said Godfrey, who clarified he has not litigated in federal court and does not practice securities law. While Ripple does make the conclusion, it does not actually argue the fact. Ripple does not advance any argument to prove such a denial accordingly, it is addressed, but not argued, Godfrey explained. Arguing that XRP is not a security would be too risky of a strategy, Rettig said. Trying to make this point in court would require a fact-intensive analysis at the least. Focusing instead on straightforward legal defenses allowed Ripple to avoid having to fight this point, she said. If you have independent grounds for a dismissal, and you don't have to get into a fact-intensive analysis, why do it? Moreover, Ripple's statement that XRP is not a security because it is a currency may not necessarily hold up. Something can be a currency and still be a security or investment contract under securities law, Pally said. Basically, just because it's one thing doesn't mean it can't be another. It can be a security for one purpose and currency for another. The application of one framework doesn't exclude another, he said. He pointed to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's ongoing legal battle with Kick Interactive, the company affiliated with the KIN cryptocurrency. Kick has argued in court that KIN is a currency and therefore cannot be a security, Pally said. The SEC disagrees with this assessment. Defensive tactics. Rettig said Ripple's use of the statute of repose argument, meaning the company argued the defendants are too late in filing the lawsuit, was interesting, and has been used successfully in other cases. The statute of repose is a period of time after a sale begins where parties can file suit for alleged wrongdoing. It differs from a statute of limitations in that the latter only starts after the victim learns of the misconduct, according to a New York Times column by law professor Peter Henning. The statute of repose argument was used successfully a number of times in cases bringing Securities Act claims relating to mortgage-backed securities 6 or 7 years ago, which provides precedent the defendants could rely on, Rettig explained. Ripple's use of the facts presented in the plaintiff's August complaint also bolstered its motion. When plaintiff first filed the amended complaint, there was a lot of discussion about how novel and interesting it was that plaintiff cited extensively to websites, to social media and the like, Rettig said. It was an interesting tactic and it made for a robust complaint. Ripple was able to piggyback off of this tactic to introduce additional facts of its own, though. Rettig explained, usually defendants can only use the facts alleged in the complaint itself or the facts incorporated by reference in a complaint in defending against claims on a motion to dismiss. Here, however, defendants were able to use all of the facts in the documents, websites and social media posts to which the complaint cites in rebutting plaintiff's claims. She cited Ripple's use of a wiki page to support its statute of repose argument, noting that the plaintiffs originally introduced other details on the same wiki page to support their own original argument. Godfrey added that Ripple strikes a seemingly fatal blow at part of the plaintiff's amended complaint by using the facts the plaintiff provided. By showing no relief was available for count 1, Ripple was able to demonstrate there was a failure to state a cause of action for count 2, he said. Next steps. In the filing expected Monday, the plaintiff can try to move the case forward in a few different ways. Rettig said she thinks the plaintiff might either try to make a relation back argument, which means they're going to try to relate back to the first filed case alleging that Ripple violated securities laws. Ripple has been facing lawsuits alleging it sold XRP as an unregistered security since at least May 2018. However, this may not be a winning strategy, given that Ripple has already argued in its motion that the plaintiff would lose under the statute of repose, Rettig said. Plaintiff also relies on a continuing sale theory, and they may apply that argument to the statutory requirement that the statute of repose runs from the date the security was first bona fide offered to the public, she said. Godfrey said the eventual discovery process could help the plaintiffs verify whether or not they actually bought XRP from Ripple, saying, "If I were plaintiff's attorneys, I would focus on the fact that while the inference could not be maintained in the past, with present technology and some well-aimed discovery, it would be quite easy to determine whether or not XRP was purchased by plaintiffs from defendants." Pally noted that because some of the claims are based on secondary market transactions, there could be no privity, or legal relationship, between the plaintiff and Ripple with SoStack's actual purchase of XRP. Godfrey pointed to self-proclaimed Bitcoin creator Craig Wright's recent legal fight with the estate of Ira Kleiman, noting that the magistrate judge presiding over that case cited the evidentiary trail Bitcoin transactions provide. XRP and the Intelledger protocol also allow for every transaction to be traced, Godfrey said. Procedurally, Pally pointed out that a class would need to be certified at some point as well, which would also include a class certification briefing. The never-ending story. One concern for Ripple is the fact that it will likely remain a target for lawsuits even if it wins in this case, Pally said. Many companies in the crypto space are difficult to sue because they have no money. Ripple does not have this issue, given its XRP holdings and business. With ICO class action litigation from an economics perspective, you have to ask how much money can you recover? Ripple, you have a solid chance of money, Pally said, adding, "Even if Ripple wins, it's not necessarily the end, and that's what's interesting, and people don't understand the relationship between civil litigation and regulatory enforcement and criminal and class actions. It would mean something if the case was dismissed, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the end." Tobacco companies have a similar issue, where they have to win every case brought against them. If they lose a single case, other parties can use that loss in lawsuits of their own. "It's not like winning this case means that nobody else can sue them for securities violations," Pally said. He also noted that, at least in the current litigation, the claim is limited to a "you didn't register here" argument, but there might also be fraud or securities law claims. "This isn't to say that parties can sue Ripple and win, just that they can file suit." Meantime, blockchain industry lawyers will be following the SoStack case closely. "It's not going to end for a long time," Rettig said. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again PayCademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.